For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Every time I sit zazen with people, which is probably all the time, I just feel a lot of gratitude for us doing whatever we're doing in this practice together. So I just want to thank everyone for hanging out and practicing together this morning. Sort of blustery, warmish winter day. Really seems to me that Sangha is sort of what it's all about, that is community of people practicing together. It's our greatest teaching, our greatest effort. Even when we're sitting kind of facing the wall and feel like we're alone or in our private home practice spaces, we're never really alone. We're always practicing together, whether we feel that or not. So I've been practicing with a sort of line of teaching that I received via the email recently, I guess in November. I was looking at my iPhone and the subject line popped up, "Uninvited beings in the Zendo." And I was like, what? How can this be? I thought all beings are invited to the Zendo. I must investigate this great matter, you know. So immediately, of course, I began to tell a bunch of stories just reading that subject line, right? I'm like, wonder who wrote this, what's going on with the invited beings, what's wrong in the Zendo, you know. I mean, just a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I didn't even read the content of the body of the text yet. And there were many responses. I mean, you know, for several weeks, and even I think as recent as last week maybe, I kept getting responses. You know, this was an email that was sent by a Sangha member to temple administrators and other people. I'm not a temple administrator, but somehow somebody wanted to send this to me, and I'm grateful that they did. But what happened was, I kept getting these emails, uninvited beings in the Zendo, because people were responding in this thread. And I would read every one of them. I'd be on the train, going to work, and uninvited beings in the Zendo. So I felt this was some kind of profound teaching, really. First of all, I just start to go, wow, you know, I can cook up stories, and I'm cooking up stories with a whole bunch of other people. You know, from what I could understand, the impetus for this email was that there were sightings recently of a millipede and a water beetle in the Zendo. And this generated concern that some people, I think, might have had reactions like were afraid or were afraid the Zendo was infested, which I think it is. Like, we're kind of infesting the Zendo right now. I wonder if, like, the millipede is like, oh my God, there's some uninvited beings in the Zendo. So I think this is what happens. So someone's like, this could discourage people from coming to Ancient Dragon. And it is quite possible that there may be people in here who are afraid of millipedes. And I certainly, I find millipedes a little disturbing. They're sort of feathery, quick-moving things that kind of scare me a little bit. So, and I have not noticed millipedes in the Zendo, but I did notice some spiders recently. One suggestion actually was to get big spiders to eat the millipedes. That was one suggestion. So this is Sangha. This is how we practice together. I was really struck because I was like, everybody, you know, these responses kept coming for several weeks, and it was clear that people were concerned. They wanted to make a practice space that was welcoming to all beings and take care of the millipede and the water beetles and the humans and whatever else is happening here. And we're wholeheartedly engaging in that with each other. And I started to become very grateful for this, you know, because it started to help me kind of see that there's a sharing and a caring and a kind of sincerity that is the heart of our practice, and it only comes about from us interacting with each other, you know, with kind of being willing to be scared by a millipede or wonder how we will handle such a situation. And so I just, I had this, like, all the time, uninvited beings in the Zendo was kind of flowing through my body at different times. I walked down the street, uninvited beings in the Zendo. And, you know, I think this is everything in our life can kind of provoke a movement, an inspiration, a devotion, a contemplation, a infusion of our lives with this thing called Buddha Dharma, which is really, maybe all we need to say is it's caring and appreciating our world and trying to be careful in some way not to hurt life or to benefit all beings, including the wood that makes up this floor or our clothing or the people that we don't especially like. So that sort of started to you know, resonate with me, thinking about, like, well, the whole world is really kind of our Zendo, our meditation hall, our practice place, and, you know, there actually are lots of times in the day that I might be like, oh, this being isn't really invited. You know, like, might be some stinky person next to me on the L, and I'm like, I don't know, that I notice my aversion. So I think practicing with whatever is sort of popping across your email can be helpful sometimes to look at, you know, at least for myself, I like to kind of look at myself and go, wow, I've got all these stories about these appearances in the world. You know, children and parents actually cook up stories about their prospective parents, cook up stories about their babies and the careers that their children will have before conception. You know, our brains are constantly, our minds are constantly generating ideas, and that's not going to stop. But how we relate to them is sort of a fruit of practice, and it's a fruit of our interaction with each other. Because we can't actually know. Like, I don't think I know the millipede, or that I know any of you, even though some of you I've known for quite some time. And so we don't really know what to do, and we don't really know what's going on. And still we have to live and act in this world full of uninvited situations, surprising situations, uninvited aspects of ourselves, and that we all have these blind spots as we're kind of stumbling along. And I think in Zazen we, you know, slowly help each other develop this ability to be present with unknowing and not freak out too much. Because our stories are always telling us, we know something. And then it's like, uh-oh, wait, maybe I don't know this. Oh, I better figure it out really fast and try to, like, contain it. And so there's a lot that gets sort of activated every day in our life. And I think practice is sort of about how do we kind of settle and help each other settle. So one way is certainly checking things out with each other, which sometimes means bumping into each other a little bit. No, I think I might bump into Don. Hi, Don. Or the Eno, like I when to check in with the Eno, you know, I felt it was a little bit maybe I didn't take enough time to check in with you whether it was okay about announcements. And I was worried I startled you a little bit.
Didn't work out.
It's okay. Okay. I felt like I was being like a little bossy. I said, could you, you know, I think the Eno's job is to do announcements. And it wasn't because I really wanted to get out of doing announcements, but I feel our Eno knows what's going on better than I do. So. But this is Sangha. It's, and it's happening even when you're on your cushion, some little spider or millipede or something's going to sneak across your field of vision. And not knowing what to do with things, I remember, here's a good story, the story I liked. Jerry, you might remember this. I was at a monastic retreat, and I walked into study hall, which happens in the morning after meditation and breakfast, and it's pretty much completely quiet, like most things in a monastic situation. And there was a sign that said, skunk asleep in the cabinet. Please be quiet. I was like, wow. There's a skunk in the cabinet. And you know, we're also sitting here studying, you know, seriously studying, or at least myself, falling asleep because I'm tired. And then I heard somebody say, yeah, there was some discussion about what to do. And, you know, I'm sure in any practice place, there was the equivalent, since they probably don't use email there, but there was like the equivalent of an email discussion probably about what to do if the skunk's in the thing, and how do we do study hall, and how do we take care of the skunk. And it turns out, I guess, skunk are nocturnal creatures, so one had burrowed underneath the dining room and ended up in a cabinet, and it was asleep, and apparently it'll wake up at night and went away. And I think it did. That night, about 2 in the morning, I was woken up by a powerful odor. The skunk had somehow, sprayed its stuff outside in the courtyard under my window. But it wasn't so bad. I mean, it was diffused by the air and, you know, but it did wake me up, and I'm like, wow, if that would have happened in that study hall, that would have been kind of interesting. But you know, we have these situations. Sometimes the skunk takes the form of a human being who's like in my space, who I'm like, that thing's going to spray me. You know, what am I going to do? How do I relate to it? I have an aversion to it. You know, it makes me sick to the person makes me sick to my stomach. These things happen in our lives. So for me, I'm like, well, how do I live in this world where it's full of things I don't know, my own blind spots and skunks, things that scare me. And this image, which, you know, I hesitate to bring it out, but I will. The reason I hesitate is I think I've bored half the people, at least in the room, with this image. But it keeps coming back to me. This is a drawing by Hakuin. And feel free to look up. Take a peek. Some of you might recognize this. I'll pass out a little bonus present. And I'll share mine with you if you could. I don't know how many I made of these. But these are two blind men crossing a log bridge over a precipice. You know, I can't really tell the gender. They could be transgender, they could be female. I don't know what's going on. But Hakuin, you know, they're blind men. But I think they could be any of us. I think they are us. And, you know, they're blind. There's some direction between two kind of mountains. And they have these sticks that they're tapping. Along. And the quote that goes with this is something like, caring for health and living life are like the blind men's round log bridge. A mind that can cross over is the best guide. So it's been some of my effort to kind of, what is that mind that crosses over that log bridge? What's the bridge made of? I would say there's some bit of carefulness about that crossing mind. Because some trouble could happen if one isn't careful and you can't see where you're going over a precipice on a log bridge. I think this is our life. So like a millipede comes into the zendo, and instead of just like smashing it immediately and quickly, or running out of the zendo, or whatever. I mean, maybe somebody ran out and wrote this email, but, you know, this is like when we meet a situation where we're tentative, and we kind of check things out with each other, too. And I think that that's sort of that mind that stops and, you know, kind of sometimes it has to proceed forward carefully, but also it kind of might stop in the darkness and wait a little bit and check things out, like, you know, is this okay? And I sort of had this image of this bridge woven, you know, Buddha's bridge is woven out of our precepts, which are basically to benefit all life, and paramitas, which are practices of generosity and patience and effort or energy and meditation and wisdom and precepts. So we have some guides. So like checking, like in this unknowing space. Is this in accord with these? Am I still on the bridge of these precepts, of this intention to care for the world? Are my efforts in that direction? So you know, this is what I think was actually kind of happening in that email. Everybody was sharing in this kind of wholehearted attempt to cross over together. And there's always bridges and mountains and blindness, but there's a little comfort knowing we're doing this together. So that's my story. There's a poem there by Wallace Stevens, but maybe that's a bonus. I don't think I need to read that out loud. But it also speaks to the kind of mind that is present with not knowing and still cares deeply. So thanks a lot for being here, and I welcome any of your own reactions or comments on such matters. So thank you very much. Yes.
Thank you. I love that image of the skunk. I think I'm going to carry that away with me as an image of something that you don't want there. And yet, if you had all gotten excited about it and tried actively to get it out of the library, it would undoubtedly have sprayed you all right then inside the building. And maybe that's a symbol of when we rush around trying to get rid of things without being thoughtful about it. Rush around trying to stop people who are refined anointing without being thoughtful about it. So I think I'll carry that with me. It's something to keep from back on my missing image. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had, I think I shared this with you, Hogetsu, but I had had a friend tell me a story, and I think it was Thich Nhat Hanh, and who had also told this story, but about a woman who came in, come running into this monastery, maybe, and she's naked, and she was crazy, like her family had been killed, or I mean. Probably other people know this story, but her family had been killed, and so she just completely lost it. I mean, she was naked, and she comes running in, and these people came and took her in and cared for her and clothed, you know, put, you know, got her dressed and kept her warm and, you know, kind of, you know, helped her out. And I think that that's, and I think when I got the thread, you know, I kind of thought about that, because I was, you know, I also had stories with that thread. And, like, so there was, so I really, and not that I want to, you know, wrap up and make warm a millipede necessarily, because they kind of freak me out when they come up into my actual bathroom, you know, I mean, I don't mind if they stay down in my basement and hang out, but, and that's usually where Basil, my hut, I don't even deal with them, I make Basil take them back down to the basement, but,
they're hard to catch.
They are hard to catch, but I'm like, anyhow, but I just, the idea of, like, you know, when somebody comes in and needs something, and whether or not they're, like, crazy or just, you know, or ill or, you know, just whatever, they need help, like, to be able to embrace them and help them out, even if, like, even here, like, at a storefront Zendo, and I think that that's really important. Maybe we're not, you know, equipped or capable or where I'm going with this, but I just, that was a cool, like, a cool story I heard, so I just really like that. I thought I'd share that, because I thought, yeah, so thank you, and thanks for your talk.
Thank you. You know, Don, as you were talking too, I wanted to thank you for your effort. And Don started a meditation and recovery group here, and it still is, meets, and you welcome whoever shows up in that situation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your talk. I have to say I was quite surprised to hear that there were all these emails about this topic, and I hadn't seen the emails or heard about the thread before, but I remember being the person who, about 2 weeks ago, and during tea after our service, brought up this topic about bows, actually, because I remember this big black beetle coming by, and I did personally find it extremely distracting, as did the person to my left and to my right, where I was very aware of heads moving this way and that way as it, you know, was threatening to come under our feet or go under the pillows and so on. The millipede, fortunately, zapped from left to right very quickly, so it was out of sight. And initially I did have this sort of, my first impulse was, you know, I was thinking, my gosh, the room is sort of like a collective superego telling me I should not squish it, you know. I'm very careful about acting sort of spontaneously in that direction, and later I was actually advised by Tegan, actually, that, well, if we had a cup handy, we could at least have, you know, kept it in place and removed it later, which is usually what I would have done at home, actually. But thanks, nonetheless, for pointing out that my reaction was in fact a kind of microcosm of how I may, you know, be in the world and all the anxieties that I have about different things in my life. So No, I really appreciate that, and I've been thinking a lot about it since you brought this up, so thank you.
Thank you. You know, it was great, because otherwise I wouldn't have known what to talk about today. You know, this is the Sangha, responding to whatever's going on. And there are lots of different things that people do, even Buddhists, you know. I think I read, maybe it was in David Chadwick's book on being a Zen failure or something like that, that he was in a Japanese temple, and like there were some like crazy caterpillars around, and the Japanese monks would get up and immediately smash them with their slippers. And he was like, whoa, what's up? And they're like, these things are like poisonous and dangerous, and, you know, get rid of it. They should be killed. So, you know, I don't know who, you don't know what the skillful way is. You know, if that beetle was, you know, maybe it needed to be invited elsewhere. Maybe we just couldn't stop ourselves, you know. But there are, I mean, you know, there may be times to react in certain ways. I forget, what was that? You told me this cockroach story? You know, little tiny baby? The blowtorch?
The blowtorch, yes. some years ago, at the city center in San Francisco, the kitchen at the time, David Chadwick was the head cook, and the kitchen was sort of overrun with cockroaches, but not the big southeastern cockroaches, but the very small, like the size of ants. Mm-hmm. And so they gathered in all the crevices and cracks that had any kind of remnants of edible products, which in our kitchen was a lot. So David Chadwick took on killing these, and that, of course, generated great conversations at Zen Center. So at some point, he said, you all are misunderstanding. He said, you're practicing what's called idiot compassion. And he said, idiot compassion is compassion that's being used in a place that doesn't fit and is not appropriate. He said, these insects, if they get in our food, will make us sick. And he said, you can't capture them when there's thousands of them. You can't take a little cup and put it in and take out. He said, you have to literally kill them and kill their homes to keep them away. And he said, please, do not practice idiot compassion. And I was very surprised. He and I lived across from each other, and I had never heard that phrase before. But it made a kind of sense. If someone's coming at you with a baseball bat, to think that it's compassion to stand there and let them hit you is a misunderstanding of compassion. So it was a good kind of conversation, just like this one is. You know, what is idiot compassion? When do you get a cup and scoop the bug up, and when do you stop the bug in its tracks?
With a blowtorch, right? Like you said, you got this like little
blowtorch because the cracks are so small I couldn't get into it. It worked. Once he started, within a week there were no cockroaches in the kitchen.
Wow.
What was better, to get have bugs in your food or have David Chadwick burn the place down?
I do want to make a little bit of a disclaimer that I'm not advocating blowtorches and this method. And I did have a response that I felt that there was something a little harsh in idiot compassion, because I could say, oh, those people are a bunch of idiots for caring about this millipede. But actually, I think that we become more and more skillful the more vulnerable we are with each other and talk about what we're really doing and are, you know. So maybe it is cute, you know, there's kind of a cuteness to that, but also it was a little bit harsh. That was my response.
So. Thank you for your talk.
Thank you.
It made me think about a lot of things. But in that, I was in that email
thing, and it made me think too. Okay, all of us agreed we didn't want to use chemicals to kill the bugs, but how do you discourage the bugs? And so we were talking about different things so that they don't set up home base here. But I was thinking that one time I was sitting, I think, in that seat, and a centipede came out, and I moved a little bit, and when I moved, it could tell something else was aware of it. It went back in the crack. And I've noticed in my home, I get them in my condo, and my cat will charge after them. And whenever they know you see them, they'll go back in the crack. So I kind of like to know that. All I have to do is let them know I'm watching, and they go away.
But you're not supposed to move during zazen. So, like, don't move. You know, in some temples they shout, don't move. But this is actually, like, you were studying carefully the life of this centipede.
I was distracted lately. I couldn't take my eyes off.
But you noticed something while you were watching it. Remember, it's like soft focus. Don't look, don't grab onto anything with your eyes. You know, like these instructions in zazen, you know, that we have. But it's sort of like, you know, you were like, yeah, you were watching that. But you learned something to care for. So. Thanks, Kathy. Yeah.
Like, just tell a little anecdote. It seems somehow related to this, although I don't have any real point to it, but it seems thematically related. About a month ago, I was Dōwon, I think Don was Kokyo, I think it was during like a one-day sitting or something, you know, and I'm like, the bell rings and we're sitting down and as I'm getting settled, you know, Don's kind of like doing this thing with her eyes, you know, and I see that there's like a little ant walking around, and he's been like, you know, then he wants you wherever you're aware of it, and you know, so we do this period, and you know, it's kind of doing his thing, and then you know, towards the end of that period, you know, I lost track of it. And then maybe it was a Dharma talk or something. But I saw that he was all the way over here by the Hashiki, and Taigen was getting ready to do a service. And I thought, okay, well, you know, when people come back around this way, this ant is gone, you know. And, you know, I wasn't overly concerned about it. But what was really funny is that you know, then I was aware of him again, and then slowly he started making his way back over to Don and me, and then right as, you know, I had to ring the bell, he was back, and we were just, you know, take him out as we started walking meditation. It was real life Zendo drama.
And he did his bows with Taigen?
I don't know. I mean,
spread out his little soku.
I'm sure he was up to something.
Yeah.
The moral of that story is the ants are much more, they don't care about being seen. Whereas they're not being seen.
Or they respond to being seen, but in a, like, okay, time to go back over here so I get out of here.
I think this is true with people too. That if we're quiet and gentle and observant, even with those who might get under my skin. I don't know, maybe you don't have anybody who gets under your skin, but I've got a few. And so it's good. Good practice. The little insects are helping us.